It's the Bob McCowan Podcast, brought to you by Bet Rivers. Download their online casino and sportsbook app today.
It's the Bob McCowan Podcast with yours truly and John Shannon, who is at home in Mississauga. Baseball on the docket today. On the weekend, the Los Angeles Dodgers come to town. And that is marginally significant, but it's more significant this year because of the Ohtani situation. And I would imagine a lot of people will be talking about the prospect that we had this winter of Ohtani becoming a Blue Jay.
You suspect he's going to get booed?
No, I don't think so. I don't know why he would.
Because he didn't sign here.
Because he didn't choose Toronto?
Yeah.
Well, maybe if the Blue Jays had offered $700 million, he would have. Who knows?
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's see how serious the Toronto Blue Jays were. Let's talk to the president of the club, Mark Shapiro, about that. He might tell us.
Yeah.
Well, at least he'll tell us whether they're serious or not. How's that?
Maybe.
Okay. Well, let's see. Shapiro with McCowan and Shannon after this.
Hi, this is Bob McCowan for BetRivers.com. Hey, if you're looking for a sports book or casino app, you should check out the BetRivers Sports and Casino app today. Play all of your favorite casino games for real money anywhere and anytime. Plus, get in the action with each sports game with hundreds of sports betting options. And get ready to feel like a VIP, because you'll earn both loyalty level points and bonus store points on every real money wager you make. You must be 19 plus, available in Ontario only. Please play responsibly. If you have questions or concerns about your gambling or someone close to you, contact Connex Ontario at 1-866-531-2600 or speak to an advisor free of charge. BetRivers.com.
Welcome back to the podcast, joined by President of the Toronto Blue Jays, Mark Shapiro. I don't recognize you without a hard hat on, Mark. Come on now. What's going on?
There's still plenty of construction going on here. Just we don't do it on game days. We do it when the team's on the road. But we are not finished yet. We're going to probably be working through June to finish off the project. It's somewhat amazing what's gotten done in the amount of time that we started working on it.
Are you pleased?
Yeah, I mean, it's going all the way back to last year and thinking about phase one with the outfield and then looking out now. My only disappointment is if you had never been here before and you kind of walked in, you might not know we did anything. But I think that's actually a sign that a project's done well, because it just looks like it fits. We took the existing structure and we're a long way, at least in the lower bowl and outfield, towards it being more of a baseball-specific ballpark than it is a multi-purpose 1980s, round, concrete, focused stadium.
There would be some people out there, I would imagine, that would not know that you spent a long time as a general manager yourself, certainly before you came to the Blue Jays. Are you still involved in player evaluation and trades and things like that?
Not directly in player evaluation. I think all the all the large, high leverage decisions on players. So example would be ones that are multi-year deals with multiple millions of dollars. I'm certainly involved and sign off on those. But unlike someone else signing off who's never done that job, Bob, I have so much respect for how hard it is to do those jobs, how much time they take, and how damaging it can be for someone with just an opinion to kind of come in and emotionally change the work that was done by dozens of people over hundreds of hours. So I more focus on what goes into a decision, how we're weighing, information, understanding who the people are that are contributing those decisions and what the factors were that helped us decide to get to a point, and then aligning and making sure that they're part of our overall strategy. They fit within a budget and a bigger plan that we have on both the baseball and the business side. So long answer to saying, yes, I'm involved, but day to day, while Ross reports to me. I'm not going to step in and kind of undermine or change decisions that Ross and our baseball ops group are making.
Are you saying you would not veto any kind of trade proposal?
Not based on my own evaluation. I might based on business factors. I might ask a lot of questions, but usually the point they get to, I'm comfortable with the information that goes into leading us to get to a decision. And if usually if we decide not to do something, it's a collective decision, not one person saying, we're not going to do that.
One of the things that the organization apparently has decided over the last couple of years is to focus more on defense. And that has been done at a cost to the offense. And this is a team that has not scored enough runs last year and again this year. Not as many, I think, as you would like to see. And certainly the fans would like to see. Do you question that decision at all?
It's never really a decision of, you know, are you sacrificing or choosing one thing over another? Sometimes it's what you can actually, what's available in the market. The bottom line is this. I mean, I've said this over and over again. Like our offense is dependent upon some great players that are moving from being young players to players in their prime. If they don't perform as star players, which is how our market and our fans regard those players and how we regard those players, then we're not going to score enough runs. But if they perform the way they're capable of performing and the way we expect them and they expect themselves to perform, then I think when you look up, not after 26 games, but after 162, we're going to score a lot of runs. So we're going to be dependent upon our young star caliber players to be successful.
Yep.
We always have the question, particularly in baseball, that phrase, oh, it's early. It's early. So is early 40, is early 60 games, Mark?
I discipline myself not to draw any conclusions until 40. And I think at 40, you need to take a guarded assessment of where you are and start to recognize that there's meaningful information within 40 games, John. You know, that's enough games that it's meaningful, maybe not enough to compel you to make big changes, but enough to spend the time to assess. And I think what you have to do in these jobs prior to 40 is not jump to conclusions, is wait, you know, not that 40 is a magic number, but it's somewhere around 25%, a quarter of your season being done is enough time to kind of really start to formulate a plan that you execute somewhere between 70 and 90 games to make some changes.
You are in the unique, well, not unique, but interesting situation where you have three AAA players, or had three AAA players who are having great seasons, all hitting over 300. And I know that batting average isn't supposed to mean anything, but it still does, I think. Now, one of them you brought up, under what circumstances would you make additional changes like that?
Well, I mean, I think you got to look at a couple things. One, who you're replacing, who you're taking at bats away from, and what kind of flexibility you have to make those changes. Again, you wouldn't jump to make those changes in 26 games. With Barger coming up, it was more because that's where the opportunity lied, because Kevin Kiermaier needed to take an IL break to get his hip healthy. The at-bats happened to be in left field, you know, or in the outfield, and Arelvis wasn't either left-handed or going to play the outfield, and Spencer had not played enough outfield to just stick in a major league outfield. So, but yeah, one of the good, you know, sub stories of our season has been our position players at AAA have been really good. Not just those three guys, but others like Will Robertson, guys that, you know, have not been on the, you know, maybe not been under as much focus. And even guys we picked up in the offseason, like once Brian Servin went down as a catcher, he's been really good down there as well. So we've got some depth. That's a good thing. We've got alternatives. And those, as we think about maybe making changes or adjustments in the second half, you know, those are guys that you look at before you just make trades. You'd say, are we better off just committing to our own young players?
Right.
You touched on it. Oh, go ahead, Matt.
John. No, well, one of the other things that you have done is you have a number of players who play a variety of positions. In other words, if I said to you, who's your third baseman? You know, you might You may not know. It may not be a guy every day. Same as second base. Slightly less significant in the outfield. But is that a philosophy that you guys have promoted? Do you like that? Do you like the ability to have variety in the positions that your players play?
It's interesting. It's not just us. It's really throughout the game. You know, versatility, I think, gives us flexibility to make adjustments, to kind of mix and match, to put players in the best position to be successful. In a perfect world, you've got kind of, you know, eight guys you throw out who are capable of playing
every day, right?
135, 140 games. They're all superstar players and they all perform against left and right-handed pitching. And they all perform against four-seam fastballs up and sinkers down. And it doesn't matter what type of pitcher's in the mound. They're all-star, superstar caliber players. The reality is almost no one is going to be able to put eight of those guys out every single day. Right. So while you've got guys like Bo and Vladdy and Justin Turner who are just going to be in the lineup no matter what, you've got other guys, you're picking matchups, you're trying to put them in positions to maximize their offensive impact. And that's, I think, what you see with it looks like we've got some versatility in defense and who we put out on defense as well.
How concerned are you about Vladdy?
I think Vladdy's going to be a very good player, you know, but it's obviously been a few years since he's been a superstar caliber player. His bat speed, the way he impacts the baseball, his mental approach, which is, you know, really good. He doesn't get too up or too down, you know, all lead me to believe that he's going to be a, you know, a very, very good to great major league player. Our success as a team is dependent upon that. So I believe deeply in that and hope, I'm hopeful that will happen soon.
But his issues at the plate right now, I mean, some of them have been, I'm not worried about the one error. That doesn't bother me. It's him at the plate seems to be as big a concern as anything right now. And is that something that with somebody of his ilk is just cyclical and guys get in slumps?
It's easier. If I could just tell you quickly what that is, we would already be fixing it. You know, yeah. He's working hard. He is talented. You know, our success is not dependent only on him, but is a large part dependent upon him. So we believe that'll happen.
When Vladdy first came up, one of the things we said was he was unlike his father. His father used to chase everything, as you know. Now he'd hit most of those pitches, but he hit a lot of pitches out of the strike zone.
Yes.
Vladdy did not. Vladdy was disciplined. And if you threw him something in the strike zone, Vladdy hit it. Now, that's not happening now. He's chasing a lot more than he did. What can you do to try and help him not do that?
It's just the mental side of the game. It's so hard. He knows that. It's hard. You know, hitting is a hard thing. He's got Don Mattingly in there on a daily basis working with him, who couldn't be one of the great, you know, hitters of his generation and certainly one of the most disciplined hitters in his generation. So it's just safe to say, Bob, that everything that could be done is being done. And, you know, ultimately players are accountable for their own success. So we're doing everything we can to support him.
One of the great storylines of last year was the health of your pitching staff. I mean, it was, I don't think in your career you had ever seen anything like that either.
I don't, almost no one has. That's like a once in a lifetime, you know, thing.
So you go to spring training, you start the regular season, you got to say it can't be any better. So it's got to get worse. Any concerns of your starting, I want to say five, but you're starting four. And then who do you think in the end will be your fifth?
Well, I mean, I think our rotation's been, if not the best one, the best two or three in all of Major League Baseball. So hard for me to tell you I've got concerns. I always have the same concern about pitching, that pitching is a game of attrition. You end up, you know, having to make adjustments and changes along the way. That would be my concern. But how they performed as a starting staff,
right?
I mean, hard to hope for any better than that. If we can keep that going all year, we're going to be in good shape.
I remember the other day when the guys went out and looking at Kikuchi's shoulder, you're saying, oh no, here it comes. Something's going to happen. the bad luck's got to show it sometime, but it still really hasn't, has it? It's amazing.
It's a credit to the, you know, the way those guys have worked and the way our, you know, staff, performance staff has worked with them, and how Pete and John Schneider have, you know, and been thoughtful about trying to keep them healthy and protect them when fatigue sets in. So it starts with the players. You know, you couldn't work any harder than these guys have worked. And then, you know, they've had good subject matter experts in, you know, strength and conditioning, training, recovery, you know, physical therapy with them that kind of help them stay on the field. And then I think we've done a good job as a coaching staff being aware of when fatigue sets in and getting them out.
And then there's Alek Manoah. What can be said, and
nothing can be said. He's just got to have to go to, perform. I mean, there's not much to say, you know, like he's.
But is there anything physically wrong anymore at all, or?
It doesn't mean, I know he's had some minor things, but nothing large scale, nothing that's structural.
And when does patience wear out? It doesn't wear out
anytime soon. Years. I mean, I don't know, like he was so exceptional and did some things so well, and level of competitiveness is so good. He's still a young player. If he had not come to the big leagues, you'd still be happy to have him as a guy coming up from his draft year, right this year to break into the big leagues. So, you know, a little bit of that's colored by 1 year that was just so incredible in the major league level that, you know, we're judging him against that standard, which is a little bit unfair, but you know, where he is now, you almost have to just take out what's happened in the past and, you know, be supportive of him, pull for him, and hope that he will come back and be a factor again. And there's a lot of reasons to believe he will.
With no disrespect intended, we are all of an age where we can remember pitchers throwing 120, 130, 140 pitches a game. You know, guys getting 20, maybe not 20, but 10 complete games in a year. It was not uncommon.
No.
That doesn't happen anymore. You'll be lucky. You will not have 10 complete games of your entire staff. Forget one guy. You're not alone. This is the entire game of baseball. But are there moments you sit back and look at what's going on and say, I wonder if this is the right way to go?
It's not that I wonder. It's that I wish maybe we could get back to kind of pitching to contact. But the reality is that it starts with how pitchers are being rewarded in getting opportunities to play college baseball in the U.S. and where they get drafted, and they're looking to try to spin the ball more, get higher spin rate, and throw the ball harder, because these are all objective measurements that we just didn't have the same precision 10, 15, 20 years ago, 25 years ago. And so guys are training differently, and our understanding of how to train to maximize spin rate and to maximize velocity and to maximize force and all those things make, you know, for higher effort, you know, maximum velocity pitchers, which creates a different strategy as to how you deploy those pitchers within a game. So it's not, I think you'd have to really be, and we are spending time on the competition committee being thoughtful about, are there ways to engineer rules, to engineer roster composition and structure, to think about, you know, creating different challenges that, you know, make pitchers have to throttle down, not throw as hard, pitch more to contact, and not have as many pitchers used within a game. So we're thinking about those things, Bob, at a global level, a league level, a rules type level. Not easy, and obviously any of those things have to be bargained with the players. But what you're seeing now is a direct response to kind of what players are rewarded for, but with both opportunities and money.
Yeah, but the decisions that are made, you know, regarding pitch count and how a pitcher throws, those are things that you are doing.
No, they're doing. They're a byproduct of how pitchers are pitching. They're not. You know, if pitchers were pitching 87 to 89 with sinkers like Greg Maddux and pitching to contact, we wouldn't be making decisions to pull guys. But they're coming out hot 94 to 97. And they're there's a lot more effort, a lot more strength, a lot more physicality. So we're just trying to prevent them from getting hurt is what we're trying to do.
Right. But I would say to you that, Mark, a guy who throws 97 20 years ago would be almost unhittable. But today, hitters don't have a problem with that kind of velocity, do they?
Well, guys didn't throw 97 very often, if ever, you know, 30 years ago. Yeah, so hitters now train for velocity. And if a guy can't throw more than one pitch or can't locate that pitch, you know, it doesn't matter, right? You still got to be able to locate and throw multiple pitches.
Well, yeah, but your organization is encouraging, teaching speed for pitchers.
I wouldn't necessarily say that. I think you could safely say our industry is doing that. I wouldn't say our organization All right. is doing that.
All right. I'll take that.
But, all right. We're with Mark Shapiro. Let's take a quick break and talk about a few other things. It's always good to have the president of the Blue Jays with us on the McCown podcast. So it's just a coincidence that Mark Shapiro, the president of the Blue Jays, shows up on the Friday that the Los Angeles Dodgers are in town and some guy named Ohtani in the lineup as the DH. So you can, how serious, I mean, around the time of free agency and Ohtani, there was lots of discussion about him coming here. I don't know what you can tell us, but in all earnest, how serious were the Jays?
I mean, I don't know if you can be more serious than make a, you know, an offer in the hundreds of millions of dollars and, you know, commit to the same level of commitment that the team he signed with, you know, committed to. So I think what's more interesting about that, and, you know, listen, you're always bitter to lose that competition. When we got in, I kind of felt like, hey, we need to be all in case the Dodgers blank. But it doesn't make a lot of sense for a guy whose entire life is in the West, including Hawaii, Japan, California, to sign with a team in the East. And we were the only team in the East he was considering, the only mm-hmm. team. But as we went through the process, it became clear he was legitimately considering us, regardless of whether the Dodgers were in or not. And whether we were, you know, finished second, I'm not sure that really matters, but we believe strongly that we did. But I think what was more, you know, if I had to take one thing away other than disappointment and not getting the player, it was thinking about a 10-year trajectory that when I got here, people told me, and I'm sure, Bob, you and I had this conversation, hey, free agents won't sign here. I was told that, you know, you're going to have to pay them more. You're going to have to give them more years and more dollars, like with Russell Martin. That's the only way you're going to get free agents. And I look up after Ryu, I look up after, you know, George Springer, Kevin Gausman, Chris Bassett, and then Ohtani considering us, you know, as maybe the explanation point, it was a once in a lifetime talent, you know, historic talent, and think, okay, I'm not sure that narrative exists anymore. I mean, players know it's great. It's a great place to play. They know it's an incredible privilege to represent a country. They understand what that means. And I think they now have the best clubhouse in all of Major League Baseball, the best training facility in all of Major League Baseball. And those are things that has the best family room in all of Major League Baseball. All those little things matter when you're trying to create an environment that players want to play in. And so, yeah, I just think that, when, you know, John, when I think about what to take away from it, I take that away that, mm-hmm. you know, players want to play here. It's not that, you know, woe is me, players won't come play for the Blue Jays anymore unless we overpay them. I think that's something for our fans. They've made it that way. It's something for them to be proud of.
An issue that John and I have discussed is, you know, you were prepared to pay Ohtani, it seems, at least $500 million. Some would say, well, why, if they were committed to $500 million, why not spend it somewhere else?
Yeah.
When Ohtani was no longer available.
Yeah, that was, I think we've explained that pretty thoroughly, but it was,
I know.
It was a unique business case that we could make that kind of, you know, A, the talent justified it, and B, we definitely were going to receive incremental revenue that we would never get with any other player. So,
did you explore that revenue? Did you explore exactly what you could get back?
I mean, we made a business case, just like you would make, and sat down with ownership and said, this is what this looks like. His talent justifies this impact on our team, and this level of incremental revenue will offset some of that, you know, stepping beyond our current budget. No other player came close to that on the market.
Of course, right. Understood.
And to be clear, when you say you sat down with people, this would be literally a boardroom of people saying, if we do this, how will revenues improve in your area, your area, your area, your area? Is that fair?
I mean, we went to the experts in the organization that run those areas of our business and ultimately sat down with Edward Rogers and Tony Staffieri and said, here's a business case, you know, for this unique player. This is a historic player. This is not a decision Mark Shapiro is going to make. You know, are you comfortable with a player on a 10-year time frame, you know, contributing at this level with this, you know, this implied, you know, contribution?
Now, Ohtani allegedly is getting a small amount per year on his deal, and the rest of the money will be held till later on.
It's deferred, yeah.
Yep. Was that on the table when you were talking to him?
Yes.
It was.
But that doesn't lower that lowers the net present value. And again, I'm not going to get into like specifics of that deal.
No, I understand.
If you defer money, it lowers the net present value. It helps you manage, you know, a competitive balance tax. But it doesn't take away from the magnitude of commitment. But it does have some. It does have some implications on budgeting. And the cash issue, though, doesn't have any impact, not on an organization like Rogers. Not a cash issue. It's more of a year-to-year budget issue.
Yeah, now, listen, when you took this job, you'd be a construction manager, you'd be an income tax lawyer, you'd be, you know, how many jobs can you have in this situation?
That's the great part of my job is that, you know, it doesn't just sit with one thing. You got to move where the leverage is, and you experience things you never thought you'd experience, and it's hard to believe. Think about this, Bob. This is my ninth year here. I mean, that's hard to imagine.
Hard to believe, isn't it?
Yeah, it is hard. It's hard for me to believe. It still feels like yesterday with my first.
And of course, now you have Canadian tax law you have to understand too.
Well, I'm a citizen, so I definitely have to.
All right.
All I have to understand is high taxes. That's all I have to understand.
So I'm curious. Yesterday afternoon, I'm driving around, I'm running errands, and I'm listening to the ball game on the radio, and damn it if it doesn't rain. What's the thought process with you and Mark, and then talking to the guys on the field in Kansas City about waiting for the rain delay? Are you guys totally
uninvolved? Once the game starts, no one has any control but the umpires in MLB. That's the reality. You have control as the home team until the game starts.
Right.
Once the game starts, you have zero control. Not one word. You don't have any influence, no advice, no impact. You know, you sit, it is within the control of the umpires who do confer with MLB, and that is it.
So when John's out there pleading to start the game again, it's not really, it's just trying to do his best to lobby?
I mean, he's talking to the people who are making the decision.
Yeah.
So, but my takeaway is this, you know, it's another thing, like I am thankful every single day that I know that the next three games are going to start at 7:07, 3:07, and, you know, 1:37. Like, there's no doubt. There's no gray. There's no question. I know exactly what the temperature is going to be, and I know exactly what time we're going to start, regardless of anything that's happening outside. And I've never taken that for after 24 years of operating in Cleveland, when I never knew what the heck was going to happen with the lake to the north.
Right.
You know, I am so grateful to have a roof here that in April and May allow us to play every game on time, which is a huge benefit for our fans, whether they recognize it or not, and definitely a benefit for our players as well.
Hey, you talked about the competition committee. You have to be thrilled with what the rule changes have done for the game and the speed of the game. When you see a game that goes an hour 49, you've got to say, man, we're doing something right, don't you?
I mean, the pitch clock for me, you know, it's a good example of when you spend time to really test something over a long period of time at every single level. You talk to everybody involved, from players to coaches to umpires to fans to front office. And you kind of say, we have high level of confidence, regardless of kind of what some of the union people said, that it was going to be successful. I still feel like it's less about length of game and more about pace of action. And we still have a ways to go. If we want to develop new fans, we have to continue to think about other ways like the pitch clock that don't change the fabric of the game and the tradition of the game, but still make it a more attractive game to people with shorter attention spans. And all that means, John, is like, where are the opportunities to kill dead time? For a while, there was 4 minutes and 13 seconds or something between balls and play. And this gets back to what Bob talked about earlier, which is pitching. You know, one of those opportunities might be to get pitchers to pitch to contact more. And so to think about what are the levers to that. Yeah. Pitchers could then pitch longer in games because they get results earlier, get away from the three probable outcomes, three true outcomes of walks, strikeouts, and homers, mm-hmm. and get back to contact, which showcases athleticism of players and creates more action-packed games, you know? So it's, again, it's a little bit like soccer, right? Like not a lot of scoring in soccer, but there's a lot of action. It's nonstop action. We don't necessarily need to be shorter games. We don't necessarily need to be more or less scoring, but we certainly need to be more action. We need to have more action within our games.
We have all been around this game a long time. Some of my fondest memories, though, and I imagine yours too, were 15 or 16 inning games, you know, in the middle of the summer, you know, sitting at the old stadium, watching the Blue Jays play the Yankees or somebody till 1 o'clock in the morning. We now have a situation where they put a runner on second base in the 10th inning, and most games end right there. How do you feel about that?
Very good.
Really?
I stopped liking 15-inning games the second I started working in this game.
Yeah.
They're actually not good for anybody, you know, other than maybe 1,000 hardcore fans. Everybody else wants them to end. You know, they're not, no one stays around. The potential for residual injuries over a long period of time, you know, is high. I'm a big believer in, you know, kind of if we can end the game, you know, more quickly, that's a positive thing. So I'm supportive of that. I understand what you're saying, but I think it's a very small number of fans who feel that way.
I tend to agree with you, to be honest. Yep. Hey, are there any other rule changes that you would like to see? Anything that's come to mind?
I think unfortunately we pulled the biggest levers, you know, with pitch clock. I'm not sure the shift changes do anything, you know, like if you look at the way teams still shift, whether it's right to the bag instead of not being on the other side of the bag, it's the impact has been marginal. So I'm not sure that's been one that's had a massive impact. I think what we need to explore are what you and I, you know, started the show talking about, which are ways to help pitchers stay healthy by creating more contact and, you know, making and putting more action in the game. The ways to do that, Bob, I think we still have work to do. We still have work to do to figure that out.
There has been a paradigm shift, though. I mean, 5 years ago, all we talked about was guys hitting home runs. And now it's just not that way anymore. It's a lot more balls in play, isn't there?
It's still a lot of home runs, man. It's still a lot of three probable outcomes of strikeouts, walks, and homers. It's the strikeouts and walks we probably need to get away from and kind of get more action, get more balls in play.
Hey, thanks for this, Mark. Put your hard hat back on, you know.
I'm going to put my watching glasses on for the next 6 days. Then the hard hat will go on after that.
Thanks, Mal. Right. Appreciate
okay.
it.
Good
Mark
to see
Shapiro,
you
the Toronto Blue Jays. Bob and I'll be back after this. So what did you make of the president?
Well, he's a good talker. And he's also of an era that matches you and I. You know, so I like to talk about things like that bug me, because I'm that old guy sitting in his chair who has watched baseball for 65 years. And things happen in the game today that I don't like, you know. Starting pitchers. I like four. I like to see complete games and a lot of them. I don't like to see pitchers who throw 100 pitches in 5 innings. You know, in my mind, you should not, 15 is a maximum. You shouldn't have to throw more than 15 pitches an inning. Well, that isn't the case anymore. And we get guys pulled in the fourth and fifth inning because of their pitch count.
Yep.
Why is that? Because they aren't throwing snuff strikes. So that's why I had to ask about, you know, are you trying to throw, have pitchers throw more strikes? Do you want to get to back to, you know, 120, 130 pitches a game? Do you, is complete games, should they be important? And, you know, to me it is.
It's funny, he snuck it in there at the end of one of his answers in the first half of the show. And he said, and of course, there's always something to do with money. Because they have to protect their investments, Bob. You know that.
I know that. But then again, you know, that has always existed in the game. This is not a new thing. They now make a lot of money. But believe me, when Steve Carlton signed his first $100,000 contract, you don't think he thought about money? Sure he did. Every bit as much as Ohtani.
Oh, no, I'm not. It's not the player thinking about the money. It's the team.
Well, I understand that, but it's all relatively the same as it was. That part of the game has really not changed. Just the total amount of money involved.
I think it's difficult to sit across from the owner of your club and tell them that the $100 million player is out for 6 months. That part is a little different than the $100,000 player out for 6 months.
I don't agree with you at all, John. I think really? The owner was just as pissed off 30, 40 years ago.
You may be right. You may be right. Anyway, he was pretty good.
Yep, he was. I always loved talking to him.
Yeah, and you know what? He really likes coming on, so it's nice to see.
Have him anytime he wants, John.
That's McCowan. I'm Shannon. Have a good weekend. Thanks for listening or watching the McCowan Podcast.
It's the Bob McCowan Podcast, brought to you by Bet Rivers. Download their online casino and sportsbook app today.